All right. It is 4 p.m. on January 20th, 2026, and this is the City of Iowa City work session. I'm going to call it to order. And hello, everyone. Welcome to your City Hall. We'll go to item number one, which is the University of Iowa student government updates. Welcome.
We're pretty glad to be back from break. Ava will be here. They just had a class that ran kind of late. The only main thing is that we do have town hall in 2 weeks from 5 to 7, and so we're really looking forward to that event, but nothing else has really happened, and we're hoping for more things to be ramped up in the USG side of things just with the semester starting up again.
So. All right. Well, welcome back, and I'm assuming there's no other further updates that you all are hoping to give today.
No, there's no further ones.
All right, great. Welcome back. All right, we'll go on to item number two, which is clarification of agenda items.
Just acknowledge that there's a supplemental packet that's healthy in size, but plenty of time to read it before the meeting.
All right, we'll move on to item number three, information packet discussions. We'll start with January 8th.
I suppose I just wanted to comment on the report back from, or what I found out is an annual report from the Master Gardener. I loved it and just kind of wanted to highlight that I've had multiple people tell me, individual people email me that the landscaping and the gardening this spring and last spring and summer was amazing. So I just wanted to make that part of the public record that doing a phenomenal job. Like, they had some cool plants out there. So yeah, thank you.
Great. Just a thank you to staff for getting the materials from the previous strategic planning stuff. So hopefully those will be helpful for council to review for whenever we're ready to talk more about that.
All right, moving on to January 15th. IP3 will be talking on the next agenda item. So, hearing nothing, we will move on to item number four, which is review of the City Council pending work session topics. And I don't know if Jeff, if you wanted to expound upon anything at this point.
This is something that we've typically done at the start of every calendar year, at least when there's a new council seated. Now, this time around, the council's the same, but just gives you a chance to look at this pending list and determine if you want to take anything off or add anything. From a staff standpoint, we always encourage maintaining a smaller list if possible. Allows us to focus in a little bit more, but this is your list, and you can signal to the community through the publishing of this list those things that are going to be requiring your time in the coming year. So nothing that I'd specifically call your attention to, but happy to share staff thoughts on any one of the items that are out there.
Wanted to discuss the top item on the strategic plan action items, and that would be explore legal steps to discourage and prevent bad faith and predatory property investors. Just wanted to clarify that understood that to be about commercial property owners and residential property owners, but I don't really know which of those has been invested in so far and when we would expect to hear more about them.
Right. I'm glad you raised that. I had that on my list as well to get some clarity from council. So this has been, this is an action item on the strategic plan as well, and that was brought about in 2023 or so, or similar in time to when Haven Park came in and was buying up a bunch of the mobile home parks in the community and in the area. That was followed by complaints by residents about severely increased lot rents and poor service delivery on the part of new management. And so based on the timing and the discussion, at least as I recall it around that time, I understood this to be about that issue. that is, particularly out-of-state investors coming in and buying up the mobile home parks and then acting in such a way to the detriment of the residents. That said, more recently it's been raised, or a question was raised, oh, well, maybe this relates to, I'll say, non-mobile home tenants as well. To which my answer was, that wasn't my understanding, but obviously it's crucial to me that I'm pursuing what it is that, you know, not only that council, but more specifically this council, wants to see me do. I had reported back to council a couple of years ago about the legal steps, or the steps I'd taken to explore what we could do on that topic, and the roadblocks that are present in state code in a lot of ways. But council had asked to, you know, leave it on. And so that's kind of where we are. I'm happy to provide a memo about that. But really what I'm looking for from you folks is clarity as to what you would like that to be. That is broader so that it affects issues suffered by, I'll say, normal commercial tenants in commercial apartment buildings, I should say. Or if your understanding was no, that was really limited to the kind of out-of-state, you know, predatory investors coming in and buying up those properties.
So I'm just going to jump right in because I think I was the council member that sort of got this ball rolling originally. And yes, historically, the history is spot on. That's how this got started, was looking at the mobile home. And I do remember, and there is the information that you did provide to us, looking at some of the state obstacles and state law. In addition to which has been helpful just to have that knowledge, but also as we craft some of our requests for the state legislature to change those state laws. So I think that has been good. I think the exploring part, probably that verb definitely needs to, you know, at least in terms of the manufactured home. Mm-hmm. But perhaps in my mind, focusing just on that, monitor or continue to monitor, expanding it out into just because the predatory property investors is a multifaceted problem, right? So they look at, obviously, it hit our community first with the mobile home communities, but certainly around the country and to, I'm not sure to what extent here locally, buying up everything from single family homes to rental housing. I know there was just an article recently about short-term rental housing stock that I saw that I didn't have a chance to do a deep dive into that. So I don't know what the rest of the council is thinking. I know I certainly don't want to see this fall off completely as a topic, but I can definitely see that, you know, it needs to be updated because as, you know, these things continue to happen, as it continues to develop, as we continue to see different laws coming from the state, just having like the city, to me, it would be super helpful to me individually to have a city attorney's office sort of be aware of that and maybe keep a monitor and flag something if it comes up. You know, and in addition to commercial properties, like, you know, predatory rental things for some of our commercial properties downtown has been something I've heard from constituents about. And so, you know, just wondering what we can do as a city in those times and places. And so I guess, you know, my thoughts on it, and certainly hear from the rest of the council, is, you know, kind of continuing to see what happens, especially as ownership changes with some of the mobile home courts. So that's on there. But as we continue to see more of these things happen, to sort of kind of keep thinking about it, looking for legal options, you know, trying to keep our finger on the pulse of that problem, and whenever possible, do something to address it. So, and multiple problems. So the mobile home court, the housing end of it, plus also I think the commercial property end of it too. I think, to me, those are ongoing issues that we should be concerned about. So
I think while you're preparing a response or memo to the council, just remember that USG also has some priorities when it comes down to predatory landlords. So just want to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. I suppose when I've looked into this, I know that a lot of people, headlines anyways, definitely mobile home parks have been nationally just completely flipped upside down and abused by capital, right? By out-of-state capital investors who come in for a period of time, have a plan, extract as much as possible, make everything terrible for the residents there, and then move away, you know. But when I think of preventing bad faith and predatory property investors. I think of we don't have our shortage of bad faith and predatory property investors that are living in Iowa City and operating in Iowa City and Johnson County. So, yeah, I'm 100%. So I think when I read this, I think about all of the above, bad faith property, predatory property investors. I just heard you get off the phone with somebody who is dealing with a bad landlord, something that was very serious, not providing heat in weather that's sub-zero. So these things, definitely, if you're a renter in Iowa City, you know that this is something that affects all people who have landlords. So, yeah, I would say for me, it means all of the above.
Yes.
And even a component of a way that you can discourage or prevent bad faith and predatory property investors, in my view and how I've read it, is figuring out ways that we can bolster tenant rights in Iowa City. Because, and I know, Eric, you and I have had a lot of conversations about what is legal and not legal for municipalities to do when it comes to our home rule, as they put it, our civil law versus state law. I guess, to me, that's what that also includes.
Yeah, I agree with, like, kind of the all of the above was my understanding as we'd talked about this. Maybe I don't know if it was the first time, but, you know, maybe a second time. If you're framing up a memo, it might be really helpful to have just a really, really brief kind of, these are the areas in which the city can exert regulatory authority, like, you know, so that when we're looking at the kinds of bad faith that we see or the kinds of what we would label as predatory, just to have an understanding of the arenas in which we can respond so that we then understand where we don't have such authority and maybe, you know, would be looking to the community for different options for trying to address some of that behavior.
See, I think that the city has done a good job on their website providing resources, and it might be worthwhile to just sort of cycle through that and talk about what those resources are and where, when we can't engage in those commercial relationships as prohibited by state law, like, that is the best way we can do that, is to give people the resources and direct them towards that. But I do think we should move beyond explore legal steps and just have an action, like provide a memo on what this is and move on. It feels like a way to, rather than just have it hanging on forever, because I think it's been on there since I joined council.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, in terms of listing as a priority that stays, like, doesn't fall off the radar. So I agree with, like, you know, updates, just whatever mechanism kind of keeps that back there. So as it pops up from time to time, it's like, yeah, it's been on there and we haven't had something like new pop up. I mean, not that applies to this particular as it's written. I mean, there's stuff happening, you know, with our local mobile home communities and changes happening from time to time. I don't know that I'd want to see it fall off completely, but maybe not worded like this, because explore is like, that's been done. Our city attorney's already done a good job with that in that issue. But unfortunately, you know, the problem still exists. So I'm amenable to like some rephrasing or just, again, sort of like a background monitor and when something happens. But I really like the idea too of like kind of a reminder of like, here are the things that we know we can do or we have, you know, already have the latitude for, and that might help us identify further areas that we can, you know, again, continue to petition, lobby, you know, whatever else to give us something more, whether it be, you know, whatever that might be.
I think I have a pretty specific understanding about some of the challenges and complaints raised by manufactured housing park residents. I have a more general sense of complaints from apartment tenants. You had mentioned, Mayor, the UI or USG concerns. Can I rely on that report to identify the concerns that I should be addressing in the memo?
Yeah, I think they point out some areas.
I was just indicating, and also I think
you know, for a more inclusive look, not just the USG
reports, exactly.
But the reports that, see, I'm just...
You read my mind.
But just to culminate or aggregate from a variety of different sources, USG being one of them, but perhaps especially since we do have documented complaints.
Standard right in general, because I believe now a lot of people, like, for example, the heat is not acceptable. I know that if the city inspector knew this, they will take care of it too. But not only that, but I feel like also like the fee for the applications for the renters, this has become really a lot of money. And not only that, sometimes they know this person might not qualify based on like somebody who come new to the country. They don't have a renter like credit history. They don't have a renter history, and the denier will be based on that, even though like an application. But you know, like, can we do something where the landlord can tell the people, really, this is the criteria that you know we evaluate application for? I don't know. I really don't know exactly what to do about it. Like, but I just wanna figure out a creative way where we can like make it easy on our resident not to like pay a lot of money, and at the end of the day are not going to get that apartment. Well, you know, like for that.
A non-refundable application fee.
Non-refundable, and not to do the background check. I did my research. I think it costs between $10 to $15, but we've been seeing we will charge you know, 45 per adult, 50, you know, like a lot, you know. I don't know, like, it's like, can we do a cap?
What I'd suggest is that if council, I mean, those are all, that's all good information for me. And if council members have other kind of specific concerns like that, you can just email me and I'll address them one way or another in the memo. I don't want to have the item today, but what would you like to do? And Mayor, maybe you were about to get this. Would you like to leave this item on? Would you like to have me just indicate that I'll do a memo? And then if, you know, any three of you want to add it, then you can do it that way. It kind of council's pleasure here.
Yeah, I think once you have the memo, we'll actually have it on the agenda item.
Okay.
Just for some follow-up. Because I'm hearing this council saying we want to move towards action on this item, I do wonder if there is a couple of opportunities. One is checking in with our own, maybe Tracy and her team, to see if they have any thoughts or ideas for some solutions. One, we just heard from Councilor Sala about, you know, the background checks and you know, the costs there, as well as the applications. So we know in our social services community, we kind of transitioned to one application that was agreed upon and adopted. We do have a landlords association. So I do wonder if there is opportunity to reach out to them at some point to say, hey, these are some of the things that we're hearing from in our community, and wondering if any of these solutions are something that people would entertain. So that's just something that I think we're hoping for, is to move towards some actionable items. And again, there is going to be some limitations by our authority. And so if we're going to be looking at the community, our landlords are a part of this community. And so I think we just bring some of these issues to them and see how we can partner with them to create solutions.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
I think if it's okay with council, we can do this however you want with the pending list. But we actually did number one, so we might just go down to the next item, which is develop a vision statement for a singular regional transit system with Metro Johnson County entities, and obtain initial commitments to study a regional system from each entity's elected officials. And so I think we have, Councilor Berg, is you on MPO?
I'll jump in on this. Well, we're all on MPO, I think, except for you, Mayor. But I am someone who's been pushing this for a while. I think it kind of, just as a little context, kind of stalled out when the Crandic passenger pop-up metro concept was taken off the table by Crandic. probably about a year ago now. But I do think with our commitment to continue FareFree, with the conversation that we had at the joint entities meeting just a week ago about the great success of Trip Connect and that being a pilot that isn't funded and is just going to be going away in June, I do think this is something we need to revisit. I don't have any great ideas on the structure of, you know, bringing it back for a regional issue, but I can at least commit to, you know, now, especially being on the board with Better Together 2030, you know, following back up on that mobility pillar and seeing if that small group has any other ideas.
I like the idea of circling back to Better Together 2030 because they definitely have been doing some regional outreach, and that was the Crandic was one where it really crossed multiple entities, and so maybe checking in with them just to see what the appetite is to continue this conversation might be beneficial.
And in the spirit of collaboration, it may be that having an entity like Better Together rather than a specific municipality driving it and saying, hey, what about this regional vision, I think that's why the Crandic had a toehold. People were willing to come to the table, whereas historically for years that kind of regional look has kind of stalled out, right? So I think that at the same time, the only way it's going to happen is through the municipalities actually coming to the table and trying to hash this out, maybe that sort of beating the drum again to get another entity to drive it would be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of history that has already taken place with regional transit systems when we're talking about buses and that type of stuff.
And lowering the population threshold for a regional transit authority was still on our lobbying list that we just approved as well.
Yeah, so that could be something we could kind of talk to our legislative delegates about to kind of, you know, just represent that so it's at the top of their mind while they're in session.
One dimension of this that I think frequently about is I'm really proud of our FareFree. And I would not want to ever step back, but I do wonder if that takes us one step further away from regional transportation in some ways. So I just, in whatever conversations we have, I just wanted to be clear that that's my values, is that I don't want us to move away from FareFree.
Agreed.
I think Ames, Iowa has a regional system that's free.
Yes, iRide is.
If I'm understanding you correctly, you feel like other local entities might not be as able or willing to go FareFree.
I don't know that, but I think it's important to start at the outset saying
we're not
what
gonna,
we want. What I guess I can't speak for all of you, but what
sure,
I want.
Sure, that we FareFree. Many of us have said we're committed to FareFree as well, so I agree.
I remember bringing that up in one of the initial, it was one of the first meetings I went to as a counselor was one of these meetings with a bunch of entities at Merge talking about and I remember asking everybody and just saying, I mean, we have FareFree public transit and I think we all really like it. Has anybody thought of that? And I think no one said anything. So it was it is definitely something that would need to be hashed out for sure.
Okay. Anything else on that topic? All right, moving on. Expand neighborhood based programs such as mobile communities, social recreation sort resources. This is talking about that Fun Patrol, Nest, or micro hubs for kids and teens.
I continue to love the idea of it. I wonder about capacity resources of, excuse me, the entities that would probably be standing them up. I'm concerned about cost, energy, but I don't think it should be taken off. So let me flip the thing and say I think this continues to be an important piece of what we need for our neighborhoods, and I'll leave it at that.
I will say that we had a study of all of our recreational buildings and facilities, and one of the recommendations was you could also partner with local businesses or to fulfill your visions. And I think we've done that through a few programs, such as Dream City, in a way, where they have expanded their programs, you know, in a magnificent way that is being impacted by various parts of our community. So when we're talking about this, I think that it's something that I would like to keep in mind. Our neighborhood centers of Johnson County, we, you know, was participating in their expansion on the east side of town. In a way, I think this is all a part of this line item.
I think that's a really good point, Mayor. And again, just historically, when we did the strategic plan prioritization that came up with this item, it was kind of a conglomeration of like alternative emergency response and the NEST concept, you know, and I think we ended up putting it into one. But I do think of the field mediation program that hopefully will be standing up over the next year and a half or so as being part of that, like, you know, expansion of the into the community resources. So I don't know if it technically should fit under that item still, but I hope that's something that we will have conversations about.
And I will say I'm not sure that for me this item needs to remain, but I'm interested to hear from my colleagues. It is a part of our strategic plan, which staff will continue to, you know, invest in or present opportunities to us and start some opportunities where they have authority.
I think that it feels like this is in the same way that we sort of worked our way through the first item to say, what do we need in order to take action? This is kind of multi-tiered, right? I think it sort of, there's the study that's been done. We can look at the expansion that we have through Dream City, through neighborhood centers. We just approved the PNZ for the community center that's off of Benton, that I think also in spirit and in probably actually will have some component of that as a community center. So I think looking at those and sort of assessing what kinds of resources, what kind of programming do we have, is going to be one piece, and then to sort of say maybe where are there gaps. So I don't mind having it on here, but in some ways understanding, like, we're not going to necessarily be like, and now we're going to stand up this whole program, right? Because it's going to come from a bunch of different places. If you're talking about the alternative response pilot and what that's going to look like once it gets stood up, along with then what are these different nonprofits going to do and what their vision is, I think that we can kind of take it in a tiered way and then perhaps ask periodically for, can we get an update? And then through that, be able to see where there might be gaps that we might be able to say, maybe there's something on the far north side that that we could think about, and who has real estate there and capacity, right? So I'm not giving a very clear sense of like, we do this, this, and this, but I think that I don't know that it should be a high priority of we will talk about this in the next quarter, but rather it is, as Councillor Harmson said, with his interest with the predatory lenders property investors, that this is something that we just continue to have so that we can be updated and have it on our radar so that we can think of, is there an opportunity for us to be able to leverage a partnership or to expand in some way or to encourage that kind of work?
I'm almost wondering if organizationally we aren't really talking about two different lists, uh-huh. An on the radar list and then a like actual thing we need the city staff to come back to us for. Mm-hmm. So an on the radar list would be, for instance, talking about the predatory thing. We might like with some specific things, like for instance, what Councillor Silla had said about what can we do about application fees? Do we have any latitude as a city to set some rules like that? But then just sort of like as city staff, be at any place in the city staff, see something developing. For instance, hey, there's a whole bunch of these private equity firms buying up single family homes, you know, so we have data. So it's sort of on the radar, but it's not really that we, for these those kinds of things, and it sounds like maybe this is the same thing. If something comes up, absolutely, we'd love to see this come back to us, but, you know, we're not like putting up, as opposed to something like, like if we still wanted to talk about a sidewalk connection to Happy Hollow Park, that would be a very specific thing we would say come back to us with. So I don't know if that would make sense for us organizationally to like have a like a true like work session topic list, upcoming topic list, and then a work session on the radar list. So when something comes up, we know that we, you know, that the city staff has direction from us that, hey, if this something starts to happen, you might see it before we do. You know, we would love to have that come back to us. But just a thought.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think, I don't know, I read somewhere the city staff. Why, just, Jeff, can you just, like, tell us if you have something really on the radar or you think this is something that we can, but I don't know, I was reading somewhere, I guess forgetting right now, that this item could be, like, something, like, not in the radar, actually, but something, like, really open it for the public to come up with, maybe, same, like build on the thing that we did for the Dream City, for everything else. Can we make it like a thing that people can come and we can expand, you know, any another project by that? I don't know if I'm right, but I feel like, yeah, why don't you just tell us?
Yeah, potentially, as you get into how you're going to use your lost dollars and you think about partnerships, that's a very broad category. You could imagine partnerships in time. Incorporating this item, right? That's what Dream City was. That's what Neighborhood Centers for Johnson County was. Those were partnerships with us. So you could do that. And then to Councillor Harmson's point, I would try to keep this list to topics that you know you want to circle back to. When you're talking about on the radar items, at least for these top four items here, they are on the radar because they're still in your plan. Even if you remove them from this list here, they're still going to be in the plan, and staff is still going to be looking for opportunities to further those objectives. As you get down to the other items, that may not be true, but at least for these first four, I feel confident they're always going to be on the radar until you adopt a new plan.
Yeah, and I now I remember I saw it on the list. Yeah, I think like one of the possible thing that you proposed. Yeah, you know, yes, giving on the loss would be good because, you know, even if we did not, you're right, that's kind of in the radar because if we are not having anything specific right now, but it's still there if something come up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which.
Yeah, I agree.
Like we're kind of saying the same thing, just different ways of getting there.
So. Exactly.
It doesn't count unless all of us say it our own special way.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah,
come on. So I know everybody's saying it their own special way, but I kind of want to make sure that I understand where we are with this particular item, because what I'm hearing is this item is on our strategic plan. It is something that staff is aware of this and other things in our strategic plan that they're going to be working on. And having it here, there's no specific topic that this council would come back and have a discussion on. And so it sounds like removing this from the topic, knowing, you know, fully that the council would be presented with something should, you know, at some point they'll be presented with something from the staff. So are folks okay with removing this from the work session topics?
Yeah.
I'm seeing some.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. We're moving for a motion because it's on the last suggestion. Anyway.
It's we're going to hear about it again.
Yes.
All right. Next topic, if there's no discussion there, develop and maintain cost recovery guidelines for programs and services that balance fiscal responsibility and equity.
What does this mean?
Thank you. So, you know, when we, you'll notice, you know, your strategic plan has several dozen items. And when that plan was adopted, we listed the bullet points from that plan that before staff can really get to move on it, we need to have more conversation. Some of it was trying to understand more about what you had in mind when developing those items. This is probably one that came from staff. I'm sure that we probably presented it to you, but we before we spend a lot of time on it, we'd like to at least gauge your thoughts on it. So when we talk about cost recovery guidelines, that's not something that we do frequently in the organization. That would be, for example, to say that maybe through a recreation class, our goal is to recoup 50% of the costs. So then you know 50% is subsidized by property taxes or the general fund. Certain services that we have are greatly subsidized, and other ones are not subsidized at all. So, for example, our building inspections program, we try to recoup all of those costs through the building permit fees that we charge, so 100% cost recovery. Whereas programs like recreation programs, senior center programs, we subsidize, and you subsidize it to broaden access to the community. As budgets get tight and we really have to start prioritizing those dollars very closely, I think it would be good to have that conversation with council at some point in time. What do you want to try to get back from our aquatic system? Are you okay with a 20%? Cost recovery, or would you like to see that get closer to 50%? Staff has some thoughts on that, but before we were to put together a comprehensive proposal from you, I think it would make sense if we could have that opportunity to talk with you and make sure that we're not going to start at two very different places.
Would you imagine that when we have that initial conversation, we would have the opportunity to get a sense of, like, what other communities do, or if there are, like,
benchmarks,
sort of topic area, like best practices, that kind of thing?
What I would imagine is where we would start is we would probably list out all the services that we think are critical and let you know where we stand today and maybe give you some thoughts on where to go. We could certainly get some comparisons. Some programs are easier to compare than others, right? Building permits, housing inspections, those are pretty easy. But if you want to compare aquatics, to continue to use that example, aquatics can look very different and very in different communities. So those are a little bit more challenging to benchmark. But we would have some thoughts, and we could share with you kind of where we think we should go and how long it may take to get there. So if we want to go from a 20% to a 40%, you probably don't want to do that all in 1 year. You may want to set a goal in 5 to 10 years to get there. So we would probably lay all that out for you, put it on a work session agenda, and get some feedback.
Does this kind of analysis only incorporate operational costs, or does it also incorporate facility costs?
It could be both. Okay. Mostly operational, but it could certainly be both.
Yeah, because certainly there's programming that we provide that uses high-value facilities, and vice versa, things that cost us nothing in space, but okay.
Yeah, correct.
I'd be interested in that.
You go to the rec center, you have free access to a weight room. There's a lot of communities in the in a rec center, you might have to pay a $10 fee to get access to the weight room, like you do to the pool, right, at the rec center. So we could have those discussions, too.
I guess one question I have is, so staff is going to have a pretty good feeling of the cost and what's subsidized. It'll be, in black and white for the most part. The users of those, I'm not sure if we have data of who the users are, because I know that depending on the course, there's going to be a different, there's going to be different users. And so equity would definitely come into play depending on what the course is. It may be. So I think for me in this moment, if staff is going to create this information, I also would be relying on staff to say, hey, is this something that we really should? We can look at other communities, try to figure out what they're doing. But for me, I'm going to want to know if staff really want us to look at this and make recommendations, or if it is just this is the way it is. At this moment, we don't have any recommendations. It's just informational.
Correct. Everything you said is correct, and we would incorporate that equity into our commentary to you.
Yeah. Okay. Any other on this topic? Okay. So we'll leave that on there until we get kind of the information packet from staff and go on from there. Other topics is discussion of board and commission appointment process. Huge topic.
And a very complex one, but I think an important one that we should keep on.
I will say that I have had folks ask me, how do I go about this in a way that could feel like there's much of a chance for them to get picked? Because I think a lot of people view it and see it as like a kind of random. Like when we talk about boards and commissions, like we read the applications. A lot of times it's just like, you're all awesome. Who am I, you know? And so how else are we supposed to go about it besides vibes, besides we have seen this person's work before, besides just very minuscule things? I mean, it's a hard thing. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that a lot of people are puzzled by it. But they, understanding that it is something that's difficult.
I think it would be great if we can come with some requirement, I don't know. Like, kind of like, we need, like, to make sure we have diverse community, like, people in the committee. We, if somebody, like, apply, like, sometimes we say, oh, this person apply and they did not finish their term, we can give them another term. And if this person really served their 2 times and that's enough. If we can come up with like some mechanism of how we can like choose people sometime principles. When it comes to these things and make sure, yeah, we have diverse people. Sometimes we don't find people, maybe diverse people did not apply. That's, you know, first look for this. If we cannot find that, maybe we'll go to the next. Of course, like reading the application, make sure they are qualified like to do the job also. You know, it could be a criteria too.
Well, I think I hear 2 things. One is we want to make sure and rotate people.
Yes.
And that sort of has an inherent diversity in the sense of it's different people every 2 terms or whatever. And I know that, yeah, in terms of like other, like even like, we, you know, we lost the ability to even do a gender balance to our commissions according to state law here, what, a year ago, 2 years ago, that we lost that ability?
It sounds about right. It went from a requirement that you had gender balance, so you couldn't have more than one person discrepancy between the genders, to removing that and otherwise getting back to the kind of normal, well, thou shalt not discriminate based on gender.
But is this for the commission that's required by the state, mandated by the state, or just anything?
You're correct. That's what state law, well, let me back up. So state law originally imposed that gender balance requirement on those boards and commissions that were required by the state. Of course, we, you folks as a council decided, well, let's just apply that across the board. And then when the state removed that, then you're back to kind of normal, anti-discrimination law kind of provisions whereby, you know, you can't discriminate based on gender or sex. Now, you can consider it, of course. You just can't be a quota. You can't say, like, well, there's 6, you know, women and 3 men, and so we need to appoint a man. No, don't have to. You can consider that.
Yeah, and that's still only for the commission that met.
No, the anti-discrimination laws apply
for everything.
Across the board.
Sure.
Yeah.
Across the board. Okay, good to know. Anyway, those kind of some of ideas.
I do think... there's going to be what I'll call some low-hanging fruit, which you just mentioned a couple of them. Like, can we create just some criterion from some of the things that we're often discussing here on council about someone's term? Certainly, we can always have an exception to our policy, you know, depending on whatever the case may be, because there can be a situation where everybody that is on there, everybody that's coming off, and the people that will be remaining and new appointees, should they not make the cut because we put something in place, everybody could be new within a year. And so we may feel like, well, you know, there's going to be some benefit from having someone with some experience on this commission. So I do like the idea of, you know, coming up with some guidelines when it comes down to how we make that selection process. The other thing is, you know, what happens while on the commissions. I'm assuming that is also, is appointment the only thing that we want to discuss? Because it says appointment process. Mm-hmm. We're not wanting to talk about anything else.
I'm personally not troubled by any of this, so I'm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the process, I don't have a problem with the process of like having applications and people fill it out. I mean, some of this is incumbent upon us to do our homework, right?
Sure.
And to go through and you know, when we get some, for some, you know, we get some 24 different applications, and that's mm-hmm. a body of work to go through, but I mean, you know, so I don't see a whole lot flawed in that part of the process. I don't know what we could possibly, and by the same token, we're not going to do 24 half an hour interviews.
Yeah.
You know, that's too cumbersome. It would be too
inefficient. My thoughts would just be more responsibility on us, if anything, like counselors mm-hmm. in terms of, like you said, if 24 people applied and we wanted to do an interview with all of them as a council, like that wouldn't be able to do that. But stuff like that is what I think of. Just maybe, is there anything feasible that is more than just an application?
I do think that there's a possibility, and it's kind of a two-part. One is to Mazahir's point of sort of having some principles or guidelines mm-hmm. that are transparent. And so we communicate that. So piece one is, and we don't have to go crazy. In the very beginning, I was thinking, well, we could do a rubric. And it's like, well, but every applicant, it varies on...
Inner educator coming out.
Yeah, it varies on the amount. Some people are like, here's my name, here's my address, I'm interested in this commission. And others say more, right? We, too, can do, if you want to say a little bit about why you're interested or, you know, whatever. Some of that's communication. But in terms of the homework that we do, it's like maybe there are just some basic standard guidelines that we can look at. Is it, you know, that there's somebody with a great deal of interest, somebody with a great deal of experience, et cetera, et cetera, so that at least people know what the different characteristics are that we're looking for. And then we communicate out that mm-hmm. even if it's something as simple as when the city advertise that there's board availability to say, we're looking for individuals who have experience, are enthusiastic, are really engaged, because those really are the criteria under which we all are talking about them. But it's just a matter of maybe having it just kind of slightly standardized so that we have that in mind and then communicating out. These are the types of characteristics and qualities that we want from applicants. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a rubric. That would be bad.
I think not getting a little bit, maybe not too far down that rabbit hole, because it's not always the same characteristics.
No, I don't think it's exactly.
You know? I'm like, tonight we have something for the public art advisory committee, right? And so what we're going to look for there might be very different from what we want for one of our zoning regulations.
We want to honor, especially
so,
the.
So that's what we probably don't want, but some general, like, hey, be sure and be thorough in your answer. And,
yeah, I mean, that's helpful, and it's also we want to honor the individual and what they're bringing potentially to the commission. So I think so long as we're able to communicate what the types of things that we're looking at, and so maybe a conversation without going into, like, well, let me draft something and then we can revise it, which I don't think is what you were suggesting. Mm-hmm. It's just where my head went initially, and it was like, no, it does not need to be that complicated. Mm-hmm. But just to be clear and transparent, to say these are the types of qualities that we're looking for in people, and then we assess our applicants by those common characteristics.
And I think I love seeing folks that are really engaged with council or with city knowledge that are applying for the commissions, but I also equally enjoy folks that have very little to no knowledge.
Yeah, because we want more.
Yeah, you know, because they come in. You know, I think there's benefits to all of that. We see a lot of folks that are coming off the commission, various reasons why they're coming off the commission before they're finishing their term. You know, everybody has their right to resign, so no judgment here. But I do wonder if there's not a greater opportunity that we can have before someone applies, just to give them some information about an overall city government, and because they're employees, we learned that a commission, they have a lot of there's a lot of responsibilities and requirements that they must adhere to. You know, if someone wants to, you know, call all of their emails and, you know, on a specific topic or their text messages, you know, there are things that folks are getting, you know, maybe on the commission, and then we do an introduction for the commissioners. But I think even that pre-introduction might be beneficial so that people have knowledge. So without, you know, going into anything further, I do wonder as a criteria if the council would consider just an intro to, you know, boards and commissions, which could be almost what is the same thing, you know, after they actually become appointed.
I hate to say it, but that would be a great video from our mayor.
Oh, no, I think it can it can be from whomever.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I volunteered yeah. you.
No, I'm fine doing the video, but it can be a video. It can be a video.
Yeah.
I think videos are so much better than just reading something.
Yeah. Oh. Depends on the video.
Or meeting, for example.
Yes.
Just kind of letting the, I hadn't looked at this in a long time, but yeah, still there. So there is an FAQ, frequently asked questions part under the boards, commissions, and committee application page. There's right now three things listed there, and then it says more FAQs, but it's not going anywhere for me yet. But, you know, what we're talking about almost sounds like that would be a place for that, saying, okay, so when we, you know, tips on filling out your form might be sure to be thorough, you know, don't, you know, one sentence, oh, I just think I'd like to do this, isn't very helpful when I'm trying to evaluate, you know, I mean, it just isn't. What kind of time commitment, but this, to your point, you know, let people know, like, yeah, if you're on this commission, you know, you'll be expected to meet this many times a month. You'll be expected to go through materials that could equal this many hours. I think that would be a reasonable thing. And that might help some people to get into it and realize, oh, this is way more than I thought it would be. Yeah, just I'm understanding.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't suggest that we do it specific to each commission because we have over 25 or something like that.
No, in general.
But there are some that are definitely more involved than just a once-a-month meeting. I think about our HRC.
Yeah.
They're very involved in the community. And so I will just say my suggestion is not that it's a video that they are optionally looking at. It would be a requirement. Prior to them filling out the application so that they have a baseline of what it does mean. And, yeah.
Even after they apply, maybe, you know, like everybody who applies, send them a video, say, hey, yes, like, what is your video if you still, this is a requirement, and maybe people after they put the video, they will withdraw their application and say, like, what it means to be on the commission. You have to do this. You have to show up. You have to, because it is a quorum. I think those people, they don't know sometimes. Like, it is a quorum. It is something like if you are not there, they cannot meet.
Yeah.
Same thing would happen with HTC. Yeah.
It sounds like we've moved from should it be a topic to solving the problem right now. So,
it is.
Because I have like 20 ideas too, but I feel like we should get through the work less list as opposed to solve this one problem.
So it sounds like this maybe come back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think we need to actually have a work session on it. And I would like, if we're going to do that, I would like Kelly's input as the person who manages and the person who we always look to say, what are those unwritten rules? What do we normally do? So I'd hope we do that for when we schedule this discussion.
Yeah. Yes.
I will say that it is fair gain for us to solve something right now and get it off the list as well. So it is allowed, by the way, we noticed this item. But if there's nothing more on this item,
I have nothing.
I guess while you're doing this, because Sean mentioned, like, sometimes we need more into the applications and something like that. I guess want to give you, like, my story. When I applied first to the CBRB, like, long time ago, I was really, like, when I look at the application, for me as immigrants, English is my second language, I was like, okay, what should I write here? Mm-hmm. You know, what this question means. Like, many things for me was, like, which the thing that I will write it and will be like, okay, they will select me. And with, you know, like a lot of things. That's why if we really want to, like, make things diverse, I think the community members, if they want to just serve with the city, we're creating leaders in the community by giving them a chance to come and serve in this commission and learn more, be like, because you learn from experience more than just like reading anything. Like if you have hand on things, you learn more. And that's how we create leader in the community. So I don't want this to be like a criteria. You have to have this degree or you have to have this knowledge or you have to write, have a badge. No. Yes, like I had to go to someone else to help me, by the way, to fill out my application. That's why I think, you know, maybe make it a little bit easy when it comes to this only. I guess want to say that.
Cool. The one thing I will say is technical assistance, you know, if we are, you know, when we circle back to this, I think that's something to consider. I know with our CDBG and home funds, like, you know, there's technical assistance. When you are getting housing vouchers, there's a requirement there. So I'm not trying to compare apples and making this that, but I do think there still are opportunities that we can give to the community that will, one, help this council better envision why they want to be on the commission, because as a standard, you know, that what they submit in application is what we're reading. We would encourage them to reach out to us, and hopefully we'll be able to connect, because the one-on-one is always different than a sheet of paper. Absolutely. So, but we'll continue this discussion at a later date. But, yeah. All right.
Thank you.
We'll move on to license plate reader technology discussion.
Oh, yeah.
I think, well, we decided already that we were not interested in flock cameras, and I personally have not changed my mind on that at all.
Okay.
So I don't know if I personally need this to come back to me for a discussion session, but I don't know if anybody else feels differently.
I feel like it will come to us regardless. We do have license plate readers that are not flock. So I think talking about those cameras is something I'm interested in. Also, just the knowledge that we do have flock cameras in Iowa City. It's just we allow the university to use our property to put them on. So we have a contract that we can at any time say, get off our lawn in a polite way. But I think... an in-depth conversation with staff, with whoever. I think these are things that a discussion will be had one way or another. I don't know if it's going to be one of our work session topics, but yeah.
I was looking at the other way, like since I have nothing that tells me I want to actually go down that path. Block that I wouldn't need to have this come back to discuss that, but I see.
For sure, yeah.
I do know that we had conversations about the license plate readers that we already have.
Mm-hmm. The parking ramps, right?
Yeah, the parking ramps. And so, I guess I'm hearing that you're wanting to keep this on.
I don't have a strong feeling. I'm just saying if I don't have a reason to keep it on, but if other people do, I'm not going to sleep.
I guess at
that.
This moment, anyone else want to keep this on for further discussion?
Yeah, I want to keep it on.
Yeah.
All right, so we have three.
Yeah.
All right, we'll keep it on. All right. Historic preservation incentive discussion. I'm assuming there's no other top conversation on that for now.
Yeah.
Maybe we should give a little direction to staff as to what we would need in prep for that conversation, or is staff already figuring out just some basic background on where our license plate readers are now.
We don't have anything to bring to you other than any type of information that would be helpful for your discussion. So just let us know if there's something that you'd like to know, and can present it.
I'm sorry, let me interrupt. Thinking back to the conversation we had, and I think this was Councillor Dunn was on the council then, mm-hmm. so this would have been... but the ones in the parking ramp we're not actually using those currently in terms of the fees, correct? There was at one point in time discussion of using those and getting rid of the as the actual fee mechanism, or am I completely misremembering because it's been too long ago?
The ungated parking garages whereby they can collect license plate
please
numbers.
Please pull the mic by you, please.
Oh, sorry. I think you're referring to the ungated, specifically right. Chauncey Swan, where they can collect license plate numbers when they drive in and ticket them when they drive out if they don't pay. Yeah. I don't know if that technology has been started yet.
Well, we've used license plate readers in parking for a decade or more. Mm-hmm. Using that technology to identify somebody that is in violation or that has violations.
In the gated ones, those have not been turned on yet, though? We're
piloting in two of the decks on the gated solutions that really, are going to help you exit the facility faster, right? So you don't have to insert your ticket and read it. It'll read your plate as you come up, and we'll know that you don't owe anything because first hour is free, or maybe you owe $2 because you were there an hour and a half. We're piloting that in two decks right now.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose a discussion that I'm envisioning is a discussion about there's a difference between Flock and just license plate reader technology. Flock is a AI-driven weird company that there's a lot of controversy right now about. And I suppose maybe a part of the discussion would be how do we in our police department use these license plate readers? How is the data stored? How is it used? If it's used, those types of things, how this is different than Flock. Because I think a lot of people have, they're not quite sure.
Sure. Are you thinking, what are you describing almost sounds like a memo for an IP?
Could be.
And then if we want to talk about it further, then we'd have that mechanism in the IP.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it can be a memo in the IP, but if it's still on our topics list, then it should just be an agenda item, unless we're wanting to just have the IP and folks can comment on it should they want to, and then we remove it off the agenda item.
I just think we need to keep it right now until we get those IP. We need to talk about this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Should just keep it. There can be an IP attached to it,
exactly.
But we'll keep it on as an agenda item.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
All right. Anything else on this? Moving right along, historic preservation incentive discussion.
This one probably came up during Poly Eyes, whereby whenever we're faced with landmarking a building and the owner doesn't want it landmarked, but the community desperately does, it becomes a pretty ugly community fight. And the alternative pathway is to incentivize people to voluntarily landmark before we get to that position. So I think we can actually make things better for everybody. So I would prefer to figure out how to make that happen. I also think that this has an interesting correlation, too, with parking. We know that we've always seen preservation as a public good, but also parking as a public good, and we've allowed exchanges for the two. If we go through the process and reduce parking requirements, then there is a lessened incentive to trade off for historic preservation, and I would be concerned about reducing our parking requirements if it's not part of this conversation. So there's two dimensions of it. One is preventing those really ugly historic preservation fights and just having people voluntarily do this, but then also getting people who currently are in historic districts the resources they need to maintain their properties. So
Go ahead. I think one of the things that might be helpful is, because this will come back in a further discussion, is saying to staff what we would need, what we would like to be a part. So I just wanted to bring that out there. One of the things I remember is kind of that technical assistance by property owners saying that there's a lot to historic preservation, especially if you're trying to navigate applications for grants. Various grants could be local, state, federal. And so even having that a part of the incentive package could be beneficial. So I just wanted to make sure that when we're giving some comments and asking staff to, bring something back to us, that we're thinking about what might be a part of this incentive, as you did with the parking requirement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to, I don't know, again, staff, if you can remind me, Jeff, we had something about this on the last two, like, reservation?
No, we didn't. No. Right now, you'll see on your agenda today, there's three building change grants. We have additional building change grants that we plan to bring to you in the coming months. Many of those have a historic preservation component to it, but that's more on a upkeep and maintenance, smaller restoration, as opposed to what Councillor Moe's talking about, which is really more of the permanent landmarking of structures. So I think there's kind of two different paths. There's the smaller incentives like you're seeing happen with the building change, and we plan to do those every few years at least. But if you want to go down the path that Councillor Moe's speaking about, you probably would consider giving this to your Historic Preservation Commission to identify a certain number of properties that are of most interest, and then directing staff to go talk to those property owners and see if there are steps that could be taken in both parties' best interest to lead to the designation of those properties as landmarks.
But are we just talking about when we want to preserve, or also we're talking about like maintenance and all these kind of things too?
There's two topics that I think are both worthy of our discussion.
Exactly.
So this is really two. Yeah, two issues.
I want to just make sure that
and I was
we're
thinking
about those two.
Yeah, there's sort of the macro that you were talking about, but then the smaller
people who currently are making our community beautiful by maintaining their historic properties.
Right,
mm-hmm. And I know some technical help sometimes.
And I think that that's something that the Historic Preservation Commission has been much more on the front lines, because the people who are coming and applying or saying I want to make these shifts and changes then are. You know, it's the back and forth of like, well, you can do this, but here's what you must do. And it's like, my God, this is so expensive. And that there had been some conversations about ways to help mitigate that. And I know that we do have small grants, but and that there's loan opportunities as well through the state. But I do think having kind of that twofer in mind could be useful, because as you say, there's people who are doing the work to help maintain the beauty and the history, but it's expensive. So if there are ways that we could, I love the idea of just putting it back to the commission, because I know that there had been some ideas about that stemming from the commission already. So rather than us counting our fingers and toes, I think that the people who are much more experienced would have some ideas. I like that idea.
And my sense would be maybe what you were saying, Jeff, on the landmarking, the landmarking issue in particular, we're not talking about a huge universe of properties, right? Like we probably have a pretty good idea of
critical properties that might have changed ownership in the recent past that have previously been studied.
Yeah. So I like that idea too, rather than, or maybe as a step towards to see if we need some kind of policy level incentive.
Is it reasonable to, I don't know if this stays on other topics for us pending their report to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever they would report would come to you, and then you can decide at that time whether you want to schedule it or act upon it. So what I would suggest is that we just remove this based on the conversation here. Staff will frame up a request from the council to the Historic Preservation Commission, and probably several months from now you'll get a response.
Cool.
Maintenance has been a huge debate when we're talking about materials. I think I would like the commission to have a discussion, because I think materials 30 years ago is so different from materials today that, in my opinion, some of it could still meet to the eye from a distance, meet that need to still be historic. I think it would be worth a conversation for the commission to have that. I know that there are certain guidelines that, historic preservation follow to make it historic. I think I would like them to have that conversation. And I don't know if anyone else up here would be in agreement with that.
So that's a third. That would be a third leg of this, which is the guidelines in which property owners have to follow, and that is going to be a that's a large undertaking. It certainly can be done, and those guidelines need to be reviewed from time to time. But that's a much more complex request than the first two.
I mean, we're dealing with it a lot.
At some point, seem to recall we wondered about the getting, whether it was climate action staff and historic preservation staff or the commissions even together, because I think some of the complaints that have risen to the surface are like some of these methods and materials are way less efficient than what we could be doing. And so what's the impact of continuing those guidelines? Do you know if that if conversations like that ever happened?
There was certainly some discussion. I don't know that it ever materialized into a request. I don't think it did.
I like that thought, too, because there's a lot of misinformation about new materials that are supposedly superior to old materials, and that's because there's people who make a lot of money selling the new windows, but there's not a lot of money in restoring old ones. But there's a lot of good data out there that suggests otherwise, so having those people talking would be helpful. So. And windows are always that topic because they're expensive and complicated.
Is there, I think we would want to let staff know if there's actually an appetite for us to direct a big overhaul
of the guidelines.
Of the guidelines. I mean, I think the commission had brought that at some point and we said, no, it's too big of a
lift. I think I'd want to consult with staff a little bit with the comp plan turning into the zoning code rewrite. I'm not sure that now's the best time from a staff capacity to prioritize that, but I'd want to have that conversation with staff before I give you that definitive advice.
And I'm wondering if that could be a not now, but it's a pending topic, so to speak, that the commission, the request could go out for those first two, knowing that this is still looming in the background about an overhaul to the guidelines, but maybe as a first step, could be the two commissions talking together, and that wouldn't
How about this? Instead of staff just going straight to HPC, why don't we frame up this issue in writing for you all? We'll frame up all three of these, the two incentives and this piece. I'll be better informed by talking with staff, and then you all can decide which of those three you want to send to the commission and which you may want to drop, if any.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds great. I will say that I think it's imperative that the city take on the topic of materials. I think it's imperative, especially talking about climate action and what people are experiencing being a historic property owner. I thank them all. They're making our city have visible history that otherwise would be kind of, you know, potentially washed away. But I do think that discussion needs to happen and see where it lands. So, all right. We'll move on to the University of Iowa update. And that is just where we invite the University of Iowa. We did have...
2 years ago, wasn't it already?
It was last year. I want to say it was about June.
Is it really?
No, it's probably been a couple of years. Time flies.
I've not had it since I've been on council.
Are we talking about the like capital projects one?
Yep.
Yeah, that was really good.
Wow, yeah.
I don't know if I'm inventing this or remembering this, but I know that in my particular interest in an Iowa River Master Plan, since the university has so much investment in that, that's, I think, where this maybe came from is we don't know exactly what they want from the Iowa River, but yet we have a desire to have a comprehensive plan for the Iowa River. So mm-hmm. I would love to be very much focused on what are they doing?
And I suppose that could be part of the discussion. I think that was different than what I was imagining when David Keff got up and told us where they were going to spend their billions of dollars. would like to have that presentation again.
That'd be great. I had written down, what does this mean? So this is good news.
That's what it was.
This is good information.
Yeah. Better Together 2030 is also, you know, looking at the river.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I don't think there's a problem with having the what the heck is happening with the river as a pending topic,
mm-hmm. yeah,
I would be favorable to that. I think yeah. it may be different than what
yeah.
this item was.
Yeah, it's beyond just the river. It's the what yes. are they planning on doing?
Iowa River stakeholders.
Yeah, so Iowa River stakeholders, I like that. As a separate topic, but the University of Iowa update, I think it's just good because they are doing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'd be great, especially with Mercy Hospital, the old Mercy.
Yeah,
so the good. University of Iowa City campus, just to, you know, get all the updates that they're yeah. willing to do.
Yeah, because they were still talking about closing Mayflower when we had that presentation.
Yes, sure.
So it was a while ago. Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some more movements of buildings that I think it would be nice to just hear and know. All right.
Cool.
Sidewalk connection to Happy Hollow Park.
How much of this is, sorry. I was just going to say, how much of this is contingent on the developer that ultimately buys that property and what the plan is?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that we build the connection and they will like it?
I was under the impression that it could be something that once there is a plan for that property, because there currently isn't one,
right.
that's when staff would look at it and come to us with something more cohesively. That was my understanding. I don't know if that's...
So what you asked after that rezoning was that we go ahead and start designing the improvement. So we're under contract and we're designing that improvement. You'll see it in mm-hmm. tomorrow's work session as we go through the CIP. That'll be a funded item in one of the out years. And, you know, ultimately the decision on when to move forward or if to, you have to look at the impacts to the park to decide if you want to move forward first. But if and when becomes your decision, you could hold that project until there's movement on that neighboring property where there's apartment complexes planned. Or you could go ahead and do it knowing that eventually that land will develop and then our connections will be ready to be kind of plugged into those redevelopment.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. That exceeds my expectations.
So I propose that we remove this from the work session list, pending list, because we're going to talk about it.
The CIP mm-hmm. already?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Get rid of something.
All right. Low-income utility discount program. There was an IEP from April 2025.
I think that's my suggestion. I really first want to acknowledge the intent, you know, behind this program and the effort that the city put to make, you know, this water's affordability. That's no doubt. But I just have a concern about how the discount structure and whether these outcomes fully align with our equity goals. I feel like the current water discount structure works best for those with the smallest bill because it is from the basic, not necessarily those with the greatest need. I think if the city is serious about equity and affordability, it is reasonable and responsible that we revisit this and talk about it because there is a way we can make it really win-win for the city not losing money, and for the people with greatest need, do it. And I'm going to give you an example. For example, if somebody's bill is $50 and we give up to $70, $75, we raise it from $65, I think, let us say $70. If we give them 70% from their basic, for the person whose bill is 50 and 70 out of like between 36 to 40, which is the basic, that's the person get the must discount. But if we talked about somebody whose bill is 100 or 200, again, the 60% is only from the 36. So I don't think this is equity. This could be equality, I think. I don't know. My English is my second language. But I think, you know, if we really need equity, we can make it a percentage that benefit both. Mm-hmm. For the person whose bill is 50, for example, I'm going to guess through a number. If we give 15% from the whole bill, it would be less than the 65% that we give him if we do it from the basic. And also, the same 15, if we give it to somebody whose bill is 100, is only $15, or 200 is $30. So that's why I'm just really wanting you to revisit this. And we can do it in a way that the city does not lose money. Instead of like give like more to the person whose bill is 50, instead of give them like almost, I don't know what's 70 out of 36, almost 20 something. So instead we can give them only 10 or 15 discount and the same amount can subsidize somebody else. I can work on this if I take it as a project and come with something if the city staff doesn't have time. But I feel like the city staff is more knowledgeable and they can come up with something will be win-win for both. That's why I would request revisiting this.
I think last spring I offered to work with you on this, Mazahir, and I would be glad to pick that up if the council is amenable to kind of like, let's go look at it, learn more, maybe talk with staff separately, and then come back.
Come back.
Is that?
Yeah. If the council is okay with it.
Yeah, I like the idea of coming back with how many people does this impact and what's the fiscal impact? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are just the two basic questions.
Sure. Yeah.
Would love to keep it.
And in the meantime, you can look at the memo that the city provided on the IB.
While we're bringing up water.
would that then be that it will stay on or that it will become an agenda?
It'll stay on.
It'll stay on.
While we're bringing up water and we're talking about the first item that we talked about, like I think really how can we work with our landlords? Mm-hmm. I will suggest we change the name if we're wanting to work with somebody, calling them a predator may not be the most inviting words, to take it to the Landlord Association. So I might suggest we change that language.
Are you jumping back up to the first topic?
Well, yeah. It just hit me language-wise. But when we're talking about water, since we're talking about water, at times there are renters, because renters pay their own water bill, and there could be a leak in the toilet.
Yes.
And I just talked to someone last week that their bill is $600 because of the leak in their toilet. And it's been this way for months. And so the landlord, they have requested that the landlord come out and change it. We do know that the city does allow for
one time
once it is fixed, they'll give some credit back to whoever pays the bill. But if you're going out months and months and months, you know, you're only going to get one repayment. So I think that's just something that I wanted to add to that discussion. I don't know if it plays any part in the first topic with landlords, but I think it's worth mentioning because there are folks that are paying quite a bit of money. Typically, it wouldn't be $600, but for this one individual, it was.
It was before $600. We have individual who have the same thing. I think I talked to you before. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's happening.
And this is a different individual.
Exactly.
Than that one.
Mayor, I want to make sure I understood into which of these prior topics you wanted to place that.
So when we're talking about
priorities.
The legal steps where we're talking about opportunities with our landlords, and if we're going to go to the Landlord Association, some of these we can bring up issues that we're hearing from folks, and I just bring it up,
okay.
Or however it plays out.
I have a thought on this, if you don't mind, Mr. Mayor. So I think we do want to discourage and prevent bad faith and predatory property investors. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to name that, but I think there's room, from what I'm hearing you say, to say and encourage ethical landlord.
Sure.
It's kind of two different things, because the original intent here was to look at the legal things we could do, because there are, you know, we're talking about two different categories of people that I certainly don't want to conflate, and that is there are predatory private equity firms that are incredibly impactful to people in our community, people in our own families that are suffering from these kinds of people. So I think we want to make sure that we don't let them off the hook. But I appreciate what you're saying. If some of the solutions we find, you know, the other side of that in trying to have positive conversations with landlords. But I would think, too, that, like, you know, want to emphasize that ethical business people, whether any business, landlords, whatever the case may be, also want to get rid of the bad actors, right? And so I think we do want to make sure that we acknowledge that. So I kind of agree, but I think leaving in something about, hey, there are some bad actors out there, and we want to look for whatever we can do, whatever legally that we have powers that we have to make sure that we are disincentivizing those folks and protecting our own. So that's kind of my thought on that. So
yeah. I agree with you 100%. But I just also want to add that there is many, many things that the tenant have a right to contact the housing inspector to fix if the landlord did not fix, like many things, like a toilet that is not working, and they call many times the landlords, they never come, so they can contact the city on that. I know there is many, many good things that the city handle it, but some stuff also will be like cosmetic things that city does not handle it. But this is this should be one of them. Like the water is brick, and I have high
talking
bill.
Talking about two different things.
Yeah,
private equity firms are their own beast.
No. I mean, like I'm talking about what the mayor was bringing. Like the water, is like have high bill because of the leaking. I think that's something. Can is that something be add also for the people to complain to the city if the landlord did not, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know this is maybe it's not like an emergency like the heat or the bathroom is not working or like toilet is not working or something like that.
Yeah, I mean if we
but
want,
but still, it adds as up. You said, it adds up. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean if we want to have a discussion at some point about whether or not we ideologically think that landlording is inherently exploitative, I'd love to have that conversation. But I think keeping in, I think the vast majority of people would think that. I am not a bad faith or predatory property investor or landlord, but and so they would want to distance themselves from that, you know. So I think bringing this at the same time, I think you would, I don't know what you would hear back, to be honest, but I think I agree with you, Sean, that naming it and separating it, yeah, giving people the opportunity to separate it, you know.
Because I think you bring up a good point. Who's going to say, yes, I am?
Yeah.
Right?
The bad one.
And oftentimes, most of us can't see where our flaws are. So if you're trying to work with someone to really benefit the people of our community, I think, you know, in this moment, without fully thinking about where language of partnership will be most beneficial, because that's what we're asking ultimately is for partnership. So, yes, there are places where predatory language is appropriate. Do you have to say it when you're listing the challenges that folks are facing within our community, if we're going to a certain group? I don't know that you need to, you know, state that word, but because really you're trying to, at the end of the day, you're trying to negotiate a partnership for the benefit of our community members. So just something to think about. I don't know that we need to debate it here today any further, because staff will come back with something. We'll move on to item number...
Two left. I'm sorry. I was just thinking out loud.
Yes. We'll move on to the next item, follow-up on post-CPRB outreach plans.
So this is something that came to you last fall. We had Chief Liston present. There was a memo in your packet at some point in that fall. I think staff and council were maybe on two different wavelengths with that discussion. Staff was more focused on how is the police department and potentially the city manager's office going to be trying to solicit more feedback in the community. And I think you all still had a little bit of how are we going to maintain some framework of a CPRB within the parameters of law. And that conversation was a little bit disjointed. We haven't really returned to that. although the police department has put together, you know, more outreach events, and Chief Liston has, I think they just had their first kind of quarterly chiefs meeting with the community this past month, and they plan to continue those at minimum quarterly, probably more frequently going forward. So we can detail those outreach plans. I don't really know where you all stand and still looking at what kind of citizen review can take place within the parameters of the new Iowa law, but that's where this one was left.
Mm-hmm. One I want to say I think is very beneficial for the community to have opportunity to engage with the chief. I think that's great. I do understand that at least with the CPRB, there was greater opportunity to have discussions on specific things that was often in confidential, close to the public settings. Given that we don't have the opportunity to do the things that we did with the CPRB, I for one am comfortable continuing with what the chief is doing now. And if there is something specific that comes up, unless someone has something today, I think it's just presented to the council at that time.
Yeah, this is, when I think about it, I think about our conversation about how we were kind of on different pages. And when I think about the police and the chief doing more outreach events, I think, you know, they can certainly do that. I just think about this as something completely separate, a community driven, not involving the police unless they were asked to be involved in whatever. And I don't know how much work, if any work's been done trying to formulate what that could potentially look like, but that's definitely something I'm interested in. And I know that when we were having conversations publicly about this, when people were like, what the hell, why is this on the agenda? And we explained, hey, the state's making us do this, but we're trying to come up with alternatives. So I think we should still be trying to come up with an alternative.
When you say something community-driven, I'm just curious to know if that...
Is that government?
If government is involved in with that at all.
Mm-hmm. It could be. I think, if I'm remembering correctly from our conversation, we were trying to parse what type of city committee or organization we could have that didn't meet the criteria of committee and organization, so it didn't need to have the all the quorum rules or something like this, so it doesn't meet that that criteria, but could still function, not in a way where you do the illegal thing, which is currently illegal thing, which is you review personnel conduct, but just something that is not police-centered or police-involved, where people are able to come forward with things about what they're experiencing in the community. And I'm not somebody who I don't have a specific laid-out idea about what that could look like, but to my knowledge, when we had that conversation, that is... it ended at, okay, well, we will think about coming up with something like that.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about a forum where folks can come and say anything, their experience, and on the flip side, you know, there's nothing that we, the city, may be able to say, you know, depending on, if it's an employee thing, we can't, you know, share certain things. I don't know that that's wise on our part. Public opinion is real when someone hears something. And in this moment, I think the chief putting himself out there I'll take that word back, the chief offering, you know, this, you know, quarterly meeting in the moment seems like a good first step or, position for us to be in. Should there be something specific along the road that someone wants to suggest, then I think they could always bring it up and see if that's a topic that the council wants to take on. But at least for me, leaving this on here for now, I don't think it's necessary unless there's something specific that someone is proposing.
No, I think we were talking about what the CPRB could do. One was the sort of individual conduct oversight, which they cannot do. And one of the other roles that they served was the policy review, which is a little more in-depth. And that's what we actually received recommendations on, typically, or at least within my tenure. So I don't recall where we left it, but I thought that was one idea of, like, what is the policy review mechanism, and is there something we would want to do around that?
We do have our HRC, and I think that was...
Yeah, and I think we did talk about that as far as more of the concerns about complaints or discriminatory conduct would go through HRC.
And just kind of, as I think about it, I remember that we also made a point of adding this into our legislative thing about giving us back our CPRB, which in a form that actually would do something like it was supposed to do from the beginning. So, I mean, that's out there, too. So whatever we do with this, we are actively, you know, wanting to get that oversight back. I mean, that's a desire of this council. Yeah. We were all pretty unanimous on that.
Is there something that we would like? We had Stephanie come and do a presentation on the functions of the HRC. Is there something that we would just ask staff to present to us on the policy portion of it? We can broaden that language. Is there any aspects of what the HRC, of what the CPRB used to do that can continue under the umbrella of the HRC? I think that would be something that is specific, can come back with a report, but...
As somebody who was serving on that, I think, you know, the same way that you complain, you can still complain at the, you know, the human rights commissions. And the only thing is, I think, the forum that they do for the community forum, and that can be still done by maybe the human rights commissions, I don't know, or by the police department, I don't know. But that's the only thing. I don't know, but my personal, like, really understanding about the CBRB, it was not something that it have a tease or was, like, really doing things. We just make the people feel better by doing the complaint, and even if the complaint sustained, nothing was happening. So I don't know how much you want to talk about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if everybody else is okay with removing it, I suppose the reason I would like to see it is because I was under the impression that this was something that staff was going to try to come up with some type of thing for us, function for us, and give suggestions or guidance. But, you know, that's just me.
I mean, to be honest, that wasn't my recollection because we had such a robust conversation about the role of the city in something that no longer is allowed by state, and the fact that even when we did have the CPRB, that it didn't have teeth, so to speak. And so what would essentially the point be? Those are my recollections. So it's additionally, I think that what you're describing to me sounds so much more about, like, you know, what mechanisms does the community have? And so it seems to me, I'm trying to do 2026 with a little bit more simplicity, and the fact that we do have the Human Rights Commission and that there is a mechanism, and in many ways that having a complainant have a body of people listen to the complaint, adjudicate it, in many ways is you would want more, and yet we've been given even that opportunity. We've been had that opportunity taken away. So if there is another official commission that could serve that purpose, it feels like it would be a good trade-off to be able to communicate that if people have concerns, complaints, et cetera, that the Human Rights Commission could be an avenue to be heard, mm-hmm. rather than to try to stand something up that is incredibly amorphous, mm-hmm. And probably even less impactful.
Mm-hmm. And I get that. And also considering time, I mean, we don't have to necessarily hash it out right now, too. You know?
Yes. So, I am hearing maybe just remove the CPRB from the work session list. And the HRC is already a space where folks can go. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing heads shot. Nod. Okay. All right. The last one that we have to do within 5 minutes or less is the strategic plan prioritization. So there's no way that we'll be able to kind of do that, but I'll open it up for conversation.
I think we should leave it on the list and schedule a time to do it.
I think it should be a facilitated discussion. That might not be a work session, but it should be facilitated.
Yes.
I would agree. I think it was invaluable to have someone who could wrangle all the pieces.
And that'd be awesome.
Agreed.
Good enough. Yeah.
Can we plan for that kind of after we get through the budget?
Yes.
Materials?
Absolutely.
Please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One.
Sold.
Again, what are we hoping to get out of this? Because our staff, they're going to present us with the CIP, they're going to present us with the budget. and we know that they're looking at our strategic plan every time they are presenting us with some stuff.
Well, I think if we look at the 2022, even the materials that were in our IP, I think we can see that like there probably is some movement and reprioritization that we would want to do and look at, just even because circumstances have changed. So I think it's just a facilitated conversation to like narrow the focus and make it more clear.
Well, I had kind of a thought on that, because kind of dovetailing the two different ideas about we've already had discussions about our strategic plan stuff that's already into the budget process that started mm-hmm. last September. If we were going to do something about just coming back to this, to me, that's late summer, early fall, because then we can take stuff off of there budget. Before they start this process again. And I agree, it wouldn't make any sense to start that now.
Yeah. It's not reshuffling the whole deck. It's mm-hmm. a matter of saying, we know that we've been working on this, or this is accomplished.
Sure.
This is what's in flight. And then looking ahead as we look towards sort of the tail end of our strategic plan of what we still need to do and what's in process. Are they still the priorities as were marked in 2022, or again, have they shifted? So it's narrowing the funnel in a way, and just reprioritizing, I think, in potentially in the same way that the city would come to us actually with the ARPA dollars and to say, here's what we've spent, here's what's still available. Is this actually, are we still feeling this way? So that the money could be allotted in the programs and, you know, narrowing that bucket of housing. Well, this program has come up and here's this opportunity. Great, let's put it there or what mm-hmm. have you. So
I think expectations of what that, because when I hear a facilitated meeting, that seemed like there was going to be an activity, something planned. And I think there was a lot of conversation surrounding council, we can do our own homework. On the strategic plan, and if there's something that we want to kind of, you know, bring some attention to, reshift, should that be the, you know, where the council is. So is that still, I mean, because that's kind of what I'm hearing now, is that, you know, it's going to come up in the fall. Maybe staff will have some things that are in the pipeline that they're thinking about that they might want to present to us, that it's an idea. But don't want to circle.
No. I don't think there's new items. I don't think there's a major change in what's in the strategic plan. I don't think there's things that are removed or added. I think it's just prioritization and also getting us all on the same page for, like, these are the strategic plan items mm-hmm. that we will be focused on and we will achieve.
Yeah. And even, like, specification on, like, specific things that have been done and looking and continuing to do those things in particular, because the strategic plan is just very broad, and just focusing and honing in on the things and the strategies that we've done that work and what our priorities are now, the new political landscape.
And I heard Josh and Megan saying a facilitated conversation would be good. So I think that's a change from what we were talking about before. I also think a facilitated conversation would be good, even if it's just like 2 hours, you know?
Is it with staff or is it with
ECOG? I don't care.
Or is it with ECOG?
It depends on who wants to do it.
Yeah.
Well, we can leave it on there and we can circle back to that maybe at the end of our budget process to sort of do some planning for a couple months further on.
All right. We'll revisit that item after the budget. All right. Anything else?
No. All right. I'm very sorry, everybody. We
are at the end of our time. Just want to make you aware.
Okay. I guess I just wanted to flag that we I think we all got that memo from the city attorney regarding initial research into public banking. I think it came out with like a we don't know kind of answer, potentially might need to do more research in the future. I know more research is currently happening, but I think adding it to a work session topic, I think I've come to we need to do that because I feel as though we're kind of caught in the middle between we shouldn't have it on a work session until we know we can do it. Well, we don't know exactly what is happening legally, but in order to invest in those resources to research it, we need to know what it is and if it's worth doing that. So that is why I would like to add that discussion so we can hear from experts. We can hear from our staff who've been looking into it. We can ask questions.
So there's a proposal to add this topic. Just wanted to get a sense of
specifically
if council wants to.
Would that be a topic or an agenda item where there's a presentation or something?
It's like a work session.
I would imagine a work session discussion.
Yeah, I saw at least three heads. So we're going to put it on on a future work session. All right.
Thank you.
We are going to have council updates on the board assigned boards, commissions, and committees after our formal agenda with council reports. At this point, we're going to consider ourselves adjourned and be back at 6 p.m.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.